Ready?
Yes.
Cool. You're listening to Sounds a Bit Sinister, the only podcast that didn't break one bone, doesn't have a scratch on it. We examine the names of curious phenomena to discover whether anything truly sinister lurks behind them. I'm your host, Jack Winter, and with me as always is my co-host, all that medical science has been able to salvage of Rosie Winter.
Hello!
Before we begin, do you have a sinister story from history that you'd like to share?
As always, yes. On a Sunday in April 1872, a small group of men were drinking at the Barley Mow Ale House in Rockwell Green, Somerset. A gust of wind rattled the chimney, causing several objects to roll out. The men inspected these objects and realised that they were onions. Each onion was stuck with an iron pin and bore a label with the name of other local men. This example of so-called sympathetic magic had a similar intention to voodoo dolls, causing harm to their targets. One of those names was Joseph Hoyland Fox. Fox was a member of the mill-owning Quaker family that dominated the small town and ran the Temperance Hall, which encouraged abstinence from alcohol. Joseph Fox had also recently opened a coffee house to operate in direct competition with the alehouse. This evidence all points to the alehouse landlord as the magical practitioner. One contemporary local scholar reflected that this sorcery happening within walking distance of his own house was evidence of the psychic unity of mankind, and made similar practices around the world seem less alien. For context, this happened in the same decade as the first patents for both the light bulb and the telephone. Well, yeah, that's surprising.
That's really cool. I love that story. That's so bizarre. Gotta wonder if maybe those people did all meet untimely ends.
I would really like to know if they did meet untimely ends and if an onion was the cause.
That's the best thing for me, is you made the comparison there to voodoo dolls. Voodoo dolls are, like, quite simple to understand. It looks like you and I'm going to hurt it. The British version is, this is an onion, because I don't know how to make a doll that looks like you and put your name on an onion. It's the onions for you.
It's the onions for you, boy. I mean, if you think about it, like, the onion can be a good stand-in for a human. I mean, it's got many layers.
You're doing a Shrek thing right now.
I'm doing a Shrek thing. Right now. That movie taught me a lot. Like onions, we have many layers, okay. Emotional and intellectual.
I'm deeply moved, and I'm going to deeply move us on to the next section. Leaving the news behind, let's head over to the vault to find out what, this week, sounds a bit sinister. Today's sinister sound has been chosen by observing the flight of birds at sundown, and it is Maxwell's Demon. Before we start, I'm going to give you three words from this story so that you can guess. Is Maxwell's demon genuinely something sinister? Your three words are entropy, violation, heat. What do you guess? Sinister or not sinister?
Sinister. Violation? That's exceedingly sinister.
Doesn't sound good, does it?
But yeah, to be honest, the only thing that really springs to mind for me is Maxwell Demon, I know, is a character in one of my favourite movies, Velvet Goldmine.
Oh, that's interesting. So I didn't know that. I've seen that movie, but that did not spring to my mind. So he's a character?
Yeah, he's sort of a character. He's the alter ego of essentially this rock star who's supposed to be David Bowie, but isn't really David Bowie.
Okay,
knock off David Bowie. He's supposed to be essentially the Ziggy Stardust of that universe.
Oh, okay, cool. I mean, I probably don't need to say that the character from the movie Velvet Goldmine isn't the topic of today's Sounds a Bit Sinister.
I'd be very surprised if it was.
But you've made an interesting link already, and I suppose our audience should go and watch that movie. Would you recommend it?
They should totally watch that movie. It's an absolute romp. I mean, it's supposed to be about David Bowie and Iggy Pop's relationship during the 1970s.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to have a hard time dragging us back onto this scientific
topic. It's a scientific topic.
It's a science thing.
Nothing to do with pop culture and glam rock.
No, not at all. I don't think. let's drag us back to the reveal. The reveal. Maxwell's Demon is a thought experiment.
Okay, all right. That's not what I was expecting.
Not what you're expecting. And not very dramatic either.
No, not very very dramatic. When I hear the phrase Maxwell's Demon, I am picturing some kind of gothic horror thing. Not necessarily a thought experiment, which is a bit conservative by comparison.
Yes, okay, fair enough. But what if I tell you that the Maxwell's Demon thought experiment concerns the process by which the universe itself will end?
Now you're conjuring up ideas of mad scientists.
Now we're talking, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Actually, maybe gothic isn't too far off the mark.
Yeah.
So, a bit of background. This thought experiment was proposed by physicist James Clerk Maxwell in 1867 in his book Theory of Heat, which I think sounds like a Biffy Clyro album.
Theory of Heat.
It's good,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It's no Origin of Species, but it's good.
No, I guess not. What about, there's a Biffy Clyro album called Vertigo of Bliss.
Yeah, totally.
Weird fact about Maxwell. He was born less than 2 miles from where we're now sitting.
Okay, that's cool. And we are now sitting in?
Well, somewhere in Edinburgh. I don't think we should...
don't give a point on a map. But yeah, we're in Edinburgh.
I think we've already revealed too much in the process of recording just the first 3 episodes.
Yeah. So he was a Scot?
He was a Scot, indeed. And his thought experiment was a possible challenge to the second law of thermodynamics. Not a moment too soon, as I'm sure you'll agree.
So what is the second law of thermodynamics?
Okay, so yeah, we're going to need to...
We're going to have some context here.
There's going to be some context. Now, neither you or I are especially scientifically literate.
I would say that's exceedingly fair, yeah.
That's fair, yeah. But there's no way to understand Maxwell's Demon without first covering a few basic concepts. Any physicists listening who want to tell me why my layman's explanations are totally wrong can get in touch at soundsabitsinister@gmail.com or at soundsinister on Twitter.
Just be civil about it.
Well, physicists are always civil, I'm
sure.
Yeah, okay, so let's start with the second law of thermodynamics. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
You're with me, cool. The second law of thermodynamics says, in an isolated system, entropy tends to increase.
Very simple premise. What does entropy mean?
Oh, okay, rather than defining all of the terms, yeah. let's picture a baked potato.
Obviously, a baked potato.
Picture a baked potato.
Now, this is good for me. I need visualizations.
We're putting the steaming hot baked potato in a completely sealed and heat-proof box. That is our isolated system. A hot potato in a box.
Getting sweaty.
Well, yeah. It's not going to stay good forever. But the box will stay hot. That's the key fact.
Okay.
The potato can't interact with the outside world because of the box. The only thing it can interact with is the air that's already in the box. What will happen is that the potato will give off heat. The slow-moving cold molecules in the air mix up with the fast-moving hot molecules coming off the potato. The air in the box will get warmer. The potato will get colder and they'll end up the same temperature.
Okay, with you.
Excellent. And that's basically entropy. You can think of it as the energy in a system balancing itself or spreading out like butter on a hot baked potato.
Oh,
yeah, I'm really looking forward to lunch now, actually.
Yeah, me too.
So, quick science break. What would you have on your ideal baked potato?
Well, I'm a traditionalist. Probably baked beans, cheese, maybe a bit of tuna
if I'm
feeling fancy.
Chili is good on a baked potato.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that takes me right back to sort of cafeteria lunches.
Is that a problem?
Mm, they weren't the best baked potatoes.
Do you remember cafeterias? Free lockdown cafeterias.
We are still doing this in the pandemic. Haven't mixed with anybody for months.
Okay, back to physics. The potato in a box was our first thought experiment. Now we're ready to bring in Maxwell's Demon. We're going to get a new heatproof box, this time with 2 chambers, left and right. Both chambers are sealed, and there is a small hatch connecting them. There's no potato this time. Both chambers are full of air at a consistent temperature. But even air of a consistent temperature has some molecules which are slow-moving and cold, and some which are fast and hot. And this is where the demon comes into it.
Through the hatch.
There's a tiny demon in the box which can open and close the hatch between the chambers. And here's what the demon is going to do. As the molecules are flying around the chamber, it's going to open and close the hatch very quickly, letting only hot molecules pass into the right chamber, and only cold molecules pass into the left chamber. You might want to picture a lot of mixed ping pong balls, blue and red. As they bounce around, the demon makes sure that only red balls go into one chamber, and only blue balls go into the other.
What I'm picturing is a little crazy, but yes,
You should be picturing 2 boxes full of ping pong balls.
With a tiny little crazy man in the middle going, this ball here, this ball there, this ball here, this ball there.
That's exactly right, yes. You've 100% nailed the image that I am hoping to convey. So, what do you think will happen to the air in each of those chambers?
Well, if Maxwell's demon is putting red balls in one side and blue balls in the other, one side should be cold, one side should be hot.
That is exactly what the theory says. One chamber will spontaneously get colder, one chamber will spontaneously get hotter. And that means in our isolated system, the box, entropy is no longer increasing, it is decreasing. You did it, Maxwell! You solved entropy. Except, no, it doesn't work.
Is it because there is not a tiny little demon in charge of the coloured balls?
I mean, I suppose you could say in practice one of the reasons Maxwell's demon doesn't exist is that Maxwell's demon doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But even in theory, while it would have been nice, it doesn't work. Before we explain why, we're going to take another quick science break, because I really wanted to ask, why a demon?
I've been wondering that. Is it just that in the 19th century they wanted to explain science through sort of familiar cultural icons, like demons and angels and things?
I think you're basically right, yeah. From what I've read, that seems to make sense. Maxwell himself never actually referred to a demon in his original publication. The demon was added later by William Thomson, 1st Baron Kelvin, aka Lord Kelvin, which may ring a bell. He was an incredibly prolific scientist, and absolute temperatures are named after him, i.e. Kelvins.
Gosh, yes, the more you know.
The more you know. This is the podcast where you laugh and you learn. Anyway, Kelvin referred to Maxwell's demon, and the name stuck. But there have been at least a couple of other thought experiments that used the same idea. Laplace's demon, in 1814, talks about a demon that can observe every particle in the universe simultaneously. And again, Laplace didn't refer to it as a demon, it's something one of his peers came up with. There's also Descartes' demon that deals with doubting reality because a demon might be messing with you, which is really a theme for Descartes.
Yeah, I was just thinking, this is so typical of scientific principles being translated into the real world by other people. Like today, it's mass media taking one little idea from a broader scientific project and blowing it out of proportion. Like, chocolate will save you from cancer. But in the 19th century, it's like, everything is demons.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you said about translating it into the cultural context. If we were doing this now, we might posit an incredibly good AI, because that's something we can imagine either will exist or maybe does exist somewhere.
Yeah.
Back then, it was a demon. A demon's doing it.
Not to imply that everyone in the 19th century was backward.
No, not to imply that they were backward, but to imply that they had a different set of cultural...
A different cultural framework.
Yeah, that's exactly. Oh, you've nailed it. I'm so glad you're here. There were still examples of science overlapping with magical thinking in this period. People were still practicing and investigating mesmerism. Seances were big business. Astrology still had a certain cachet, as well as faith healing, palmistry, and a lot of other approaches to understanding the universe. Even reputable scientists were drawing on those metaphors to get their points across.
I feel like that's something that still happens today.
Absolutely. If you look for quotes from like the great physicists of the age, there's lots of stuff about God from avowed atheists.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the whole God doesn't play dice idea. Lots of people look at the universe through that broad metaphor of, mm-hmm. An organizing principle.
Yes. And it's easier to call it God.
Yeah, exactly. I think if Stephen Hawking said, like, okay, just picture a little demon, I think maybe people would lose faith. So let's return to the thought experiment one last time to answer two questions. Why would we want to break thermodynamics? And why doesn't Maxwell's demon actually achieve that? Okay, so if this worked in practice, if Maxwell had solved entropy, the result would essentially be a box of self-heating air. Heat is usable energy, so we would have unlimited free energy. We'd just need really big boxes of air, and we could run our whole society with them. That's one good reason to hope that thermodynamics was wrong. But it doesn't work for the simple reason that we don't have the demon. Which, you really nailed that one. Sometimes it doesn't take an inquiring scientific mind to notice the problem at the core of the rationale. You as you pointed out, we don't have tiny demons to sort out our
balls.
Air. Yeah, sorting balls. Yeah. Even our quantum computer equivalent would use more energy operating the hatch and tracking individual molecules than it could produce as a result of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
There are also more complicated reasons to do with information theory, which are really interesting, but which I'm not going to get into purely because I don't think I can explain them with a baked potato analogy.
Yeah, I feel like we're already pushing up against our limitations of discussing most scientific principles.
Yeah. I mean, if I say stuff I read on Wikipedia with enough authority, it might sound like knowledge, but it's not knowledge.
It's just baked potato analogies.
We can take it from Arthur Eddington, the scientist who demonstrated Einstein's theory of general relativity in practice. If your theory is found to be against the second law of thermodynamics, I can give you no hope. There is nothing for it but to collapse in deepest humiliation.
He sounds a delight.
He was memorably portrayed by David Tennant opposite Andy Serkis as Einstein.
Oh, in Einstein and Eddington.
In Einstein and Eddington, yes.
Fantastic docudrama.
Yeah, it's really cool, isn't it?
It is brilliant. It's
This episode is brought to you by the 2006 movie Einstein and Eddington. Before we end, would you like to hear one more reason to hope for holes in the second law of thermodynamics?
Hit me.
It's not just that we'd have free energy. It's actually a lot bigger than that. Entropy is the process that runs down the universe. Ultimately, all energy dissipates and becomes inaccessible. The universe is a cosmic baked potato cooling. As entropy balances the universe, we move ever closer to what scientists call the heat death of the universe, what Lord Kelvin described as a state of universal rest and death. It's a state where there is no longer any attainable energy, any motion, any change, any life. And in the absence of something like Maxwell's demon, it is an absolute inevitability.
Well, that's bleak.
Yeah, and that's actually what we're going to end the episode with today.
Oh, that's appropriate.
So, conclusion. So, after all that, Rosie Winter, you have all the facts. Does Maxwell's demon sound a bit sinister?
On the face of it, yes. But as a thought process, it actually strikes me as being quite hopeful and interesting and creative. Yeah, I think it superficially sounds sinister and is in fact not. How about you? Do you think it sounds a bit sinister?
I'm going to say no to sinister. There is something kind of hopeless about it, though.
Yeah, we're in agreement there.
Yeah, there's the whole death of the universe thing. And however far away that is, even billions and billions and billions of years, it means ultimately nothing has value.
Yes, it does create a bit of a pull.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing with the visual metaphor of the demon in a box is that we are that demon.
I was just thinking, we are the demon in the box trying to separate the balls, and inevitably it's a bit futile.
That's all from us today. Thanks for listening. If you have an idea for next week's sinister topic, carve it into the bark of an ash tree, but not a beech tree. Or get in touch at soundsabitsinister@gmail.com or Twitter @soundssinister.
Bye.